chit chat at the beginning.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
About kind of anything and everything. So for me, why don't I just maybe share a little bit more and you can kind of pick up the vibe of what we're doing.
Perfect.
So when I moved into the role I'm in now at OMD leading innovation, it was really undefined. And I replaced someone who was in our chief strategy officer role previously. And her name is Kristen Colonna. You may have run across her in the past. She's actually like one of your competitors now. She's at Pinar. Oh, really? Renault. Yeah. Oh. Renault. And she just did it a very different way. Mm-hmm. And so when Chrissy came to me about moving into this role, I was like, do I have to do what Kristen did? Or do I get to really create something new? And it was the create something new that she really wanted. So, you know, this is one of those endeavors of like how you work with the teams. And we have very junior staff that came up with some really wonderful ideas, one of them being Red Talks. So a little bit of background. Red Talks is more than the podcast. There is a live Red Talks event here that's just like a stage event as well, right? So it's a bigger thing. It's very grassroots, very focused on like, you know, just supporting our clients in a way that kind of puts people front and center.
Okay.
And, you know, in the very human nature of it, right? Because it's easy to say, oh, we're hosting this with Bacardi on something, right? And that is valuable, I think, as that is for the brand in the market in front of other brands. Mm-hmm. I also think there's like a world now where it's a lot of the purpose of the work we do comes from the people. And so having like the people front and center, I think, is really great. So a little bit of background on this. You know, I've been with OMD for 7 years. I come out of the digital world. I used to run Acuin, which was our programmatic arm, then picked up some resolution stuff and certain social stuff.
Didn't OMD buy Acuin?
Pardon me?
Didn't OMD buy the company?
Yes. Well, they acquired Resolution. Okay. And Resolution merged with Acuin in 2017.
I know it was always on the deck. You had the logo.
Yeah. Too many logos on a deck, right? We didn't need to do this. Which was a massive moment of change for us. And this is my first agency role. I've been in ad tech, I've been in publishing, I've built tech.
How's the change feeling?
Initially, it was very much like, how do I understand these politics? What do I get through?
Correct.
But once I figured that part out and just like was like, okay, I just got to work with people, like, again, like people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And let's focus on roles and titles and organizations and just kind of, you know, learn. So
see how the connection and really build. Yeah. Relationships.
Yeah, so far it works. So
yes,
I think but I'd love to know more about you guys, just a little bit of background before we get into like the bios.
Sure. You wanna go?
You go, Roberto.
Perfect. So well, I have been working in Bacardi for a long time.
Yeah.
Although this is my second round.
Third, no?
Third round, yes. Right. Third round. And so Bacardi has been with me for a long period of time. I started in Mexico. Responsible of Bacardi Rum.
Yeah.
Then I moved to a regional position in charge of the category, of the rum category. Then I was Mexico head of marketing. Then I moved to a regional role in the United States. And then I moved to MasterCard. And I stayed in MasterCard for 4 years. Okay. And now I have been in my current role, which is a global role, for the last 3 months and a half, 3.5 months. So
he's back.
I'm back. Very happy to be back. Yeah. You know, Bacardi is a brand that is very connected to me, and I really like it. I enjoy it. The industry is super fun, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
So yes, so very happy to be back.
You do stuff like this, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I like it. And I'm originally from Mexico. Yeah. Actually, born and raised in Mexico City. Then I moved to Monterrey, Mexico. I worked for a brewery over there for that then was acquired by Heineken. So I moved to New York. I live in New York like for 4 years. Then back to Mexico with Bacardi. Then Miami with Bacardi. Miami with MasterCard. And now still Miami and Bermuda. Because actually my role is based in Bermuda. So I need to move back.
That sounds terrible.
I know. It's awful. No, it's not. Can't complain. It's a very nice place to be.
To live.
And enjoying it a lot. And, you know, for me, the most important, one of the most important things, and you were mentioning this, is the people. Mm-hmm. At the end, it's not, you can have X role or Y role, but it's about the people, how you connect with them. And really, Bacardi, culture, family, values are really important, and those are very well connected with mine. So I'm super happy and excited to be back.
Okay, I'm glad you're back.
Yes, thanks.
Yeah.
So I come from an agency background in the UK, and then I moved to Bacardi in London, looking after Martini Cons, like creative and digital. And then moved to the US on Cazadores, which is a beautiful tequila we have. Yeah. And then I joined Roberto's team on Bacardi 6 years ago. And then he left and now he's back.
Where does Cazadores get the stag?
Why?
Yeah.
Oh, it's because the stag was in the hacienda. And so that's that. Like, they kept saying it. And so it became the emblem for the brand, and it's on the, all the packs and the bottles. We get the question all the time. It's so funny. And it's actually, it's really just, it was just there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's just maybe two brands that are similar, like, set up. And it's you, and it is Jägermeister, I think, also.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, they do have one. That's true.
Very different brands.
Yeah. Very different brand. And I don't know if you've ever looked into the lore of that one, but I do know that it is a monk had made a claim of seeing this white stag with the cross, like, yeah, being kind of being held between the, wow, the rack and
wow,
you know, apparently
I didn't know the story.
Apparently Jägermeister is a is a monk's drink. Yeah. But that's, you know,
yeah, it's tricky to learn about the stories of the different brand symbols.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And I always ask. I just think it's,
yeah, and, yeah, and sometimes it's a very well kept secret.
Yeah.
For some reason, some companies don't like to share the story.
Yeah.
But I think there's beautiful stories.
Yeah, beautiful stories.
Just, yeah.
Yeah, they're so interesting.
Do you know the one of Bacardi, the bat?
No, I don't. No, I don't. Oh,
it's an amazing one. It's an amazing one because Don Facundo really was the one that innovate by making rum more friendly for regular consumers.
Okay.
And it was in 1862 when he launched Bacardi. And basically the innovation was to filter Bacardi to have a double filtration in charcoal. So make it very friendly. But at that point, not a lot of people were able to read. So Doña Amalia, his wife, told him we need to develop a symbol that help people identify our rum. So she was inspired by the bat, because they found some bats in some of the warehouses, yeah, of Bacardi, but also it has a good the meaning of the bat is about good luck and family union. So as a family-owned company that was really anchored since the beginning for the brand, and it was Doña Amalia the one that suggested the bat, so then it became the rum of the bat.
I'm going to find a way for us to come back to that story. I think it's a good story. Okay. I want people to know it. Is it okay if we talk about that story?
Yeah, it's an amazing story.
Okay. So let's crack into it. I hope you guys feel comfortable now.
Yeah.
Right? Mic in your face sometimes can be a little bit off. So hopefully that was helpful. So welcome, first and foremost, and thank you for joining this OMD special session at Spotify Beach. Love to be in the air conditioning at Cannes. It's a very rare experience.
Yeah.
So I'm certainly happy. The session today is a conversation, right? This is a chat, and our focus is like just getting into the deliverance of the amazing work that Bacardi Rums does, especially we're in Spotify Studios, especially in the world of audio and partnership and shining light on new artists. I know we've seen a lot probably walking around the beaches. Last night there was a gentleman walking between the restaurants singing live. And so it feels like the right time to really talk about and think about the role that you play here in the upcoming launch of MLM 5.0, which we should talk about exactly what that is. But you've been leading cultural relevancy around this space. And so, again, we're really excited. I'm very excited to start to talk more about why audio has been such an integral part of your marketing DNA. So I'm really happy that you were able to join me today. I have Layla and Roberto from our Bacardi Rums clients, and I don't want to speak for you guys. So, Roberto, if you don't mind just giving a little introduction about who you are, what you do, what you love, and why you're here.
For sure. And first of all, thank you, Luke, for inviting us. It's like a great opportunity to talk about the things that we're doing with the brand. So thank you again. And I'm Roberto Ramirez. I'm the Senior Vice President of Bacardi Rums globally. And I'm originally from Mexico City. And I have been with the company quite a few times. This is the third round that I'm in the company. So very excited and very happy to work in a beautiful brand, in a beautiful industry, and with great team.
Fantastic. Well, we're glad you're here. So thank you for joining me.
And I'm Leila Mignani, Global Head of Brand Communications. Been at Bacardi for 9 years and from Morocco originally. And super happy to be here. So thank you for having us.
Yeah. Is this your first can? Old Souls?
No. This is probably my third one, and but it has been a long time since I was here.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, it's my fifth can.
Fifth or sixth, actually. Okay. Yeah. Were you here last year?
I was here last year.
For the rebirth of can?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I came to the concerts every night.
Yeah?
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah. Were you at, were you here last night?
No, last night I missed it, unfortunately.
Will you be here tonight?
But coming tonight, for sure.
Okay.
It's a place to be.
I will be with you tonight. I will find you tonight. We will hang out.
It's a place to be.
Okay, so let's talk about the brand. I want to know more. You know, Bacardi's been leaning into what I've always called this transformation, and how we reframe this perspective on the role that brands are now playing with artists, creating artists, supporting artists, being artists yourselves. Maybe you can share a little bit more of the background around the endeavor.
Absolutely. And I think music and Bacardi have a long, long story. And music has been ingrained in Bacardi for generations. Actually, if you think from the beginnings of the brand, Don Facundo Bacardi, our founder, and his family, the Bacardi family, were known for the big parties that they that make and how they invited a lot of people. And obviously, music was a key component of that. So since its very origin, Bacardi has been very connected with artists, with music. We have great stories about some of the artists, like, for example, Emilio Stefan. And very few people know that he actually worked for Bacardi in the mailroom before dedicating his life. In the mailroom.
Love that.
And yes, he was in Bacardi Limited working in the mailroom before dedicating to music. Yeah. And the reality is that the Bacardi family and the Stefan family has stayed close, and they have done a lot of work for the brand as well. And they are not the only artists. Like we have a lot of artists that we have been, you know, working with for different generations, and not only established artists, but also some up-and-coming artists. There has been a lot of platforms that we have been developing, you know, to support the up-and-coming artists. When you think in Latin America, probably one of the most well-known platforms was the Valores Bacardi, which was about, you know, developing, giving the new artists the possibility to develop themselves. And actually, most of the well-known artists in Latin America perform on that platform. So it was amazing. And most recently, we have been working with different artists like Major Lazer, also to support some of our up-and-coming artists. Not sure you remember, but actually some years ago, with Music Liberates Music, a platform that we have been developing now for probably 4 years, really?
Yeah.
It's we started actually with Spotify, creating...
Never heard of them.
Of course. Like we started creating, you know, a platform that every time that one song, one specific song of Major Lazer was played, we generated time for studio time for new artists from the Caribbean. So that was an amazing activity. It was like a really one of the probably best things that we have done. It has been evolving, which is great. And that's just one example of the different platforms and the different artists that we have been playing with. I think one key component of that is our platform, our brand platform, which is Do What Moves You, which is very connected to music. At the end, Do What Moves You has this physical and emotional component that on the physical one is about you precisely letting it go, makes you move, makes you dance, so very well connected. But also in the emotional side, where it's about, you know, the freedom of living your passion and uplifting your soul. So at the end, it's very well connected to the music. And that's why in everything that we do across Do What Moves You, all our activities, music has a key role. And it goes from the different music festivals that we support across the world, from the partnerships that we have, to the different activations that we do, you know, every time that we have the chance to connect with our consumer.
Yeah. Lele, maybe this is more of a question that you want to jump into, but music itself as a platform beyond the artists, but the actual nature of the format, do you find that because the format is so connected, because it is so human, because it feels in one way or another like ancestral,
yeah,
right? I mean, music has been a communication channel for as long as we've been around. Do you find that there are insights being derived from the actual music, and those insights are driving maybe more of the approach and thinking, okay, music itself beyond the artist is our brand or is, you know,
it's our liquids. you know, like rum is not designed to be drunk sitting down, but it makes you move and it warms your heart. So for us, it's like we call it the sound of rum, but it really does have a sound. Things that there's no other art form that's that emotionally intense in such short amount of time. Like in 15 seconds, you can feel like crying, you can feel like loving, like dance, you know? It's really intense as a connection. And so for us, it is the liquid, but it's also the occasion. It's our story and it's our fountain of youth. You know, we're 162 years, it's quite old, but it keeps us young. So that's why music is core of the brand, yeah.
Yeah, you know what's special about this, and the way you said it, about it being core to the brand, is I don't think it can be replicated either. I think what you've done and what you continue to do is very, you know, on brand is the right phrase, but it's so ownable.
Yeah.
Right?
And there's a sound that you can tell, oh, it's Bacardi.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Which I believe is really important, so. Because at the end, as you know, music is very broad. So it's really complicated to own music. If you don't have a point of view, you don't have an angle. And I think we have been able to build that. So I think that really strengthens the connections that we can establish with our consumer.
Yeah. You know, I had a panel yesterday, and on that panel was an amazing researcher, Dr. Karen Nelson Field, focuses heavily on attention, but also is NBCU from a traditional linear perspective, as well as a representative from Google, representing YouTube effectively. And so that discussion became heavily focused on reach, right? Mm-hmm. As video has traditionally been used as a reach mm-hmm. format, but it's not the only one. I would think that audio has been seen as broad reach, single format, a tool. And Bacardi seems to have really approached it well beyond that and thinking about it in this, you know, nuanced capacity, nuanced approach. That means you've got a way of investing into audio and thinking about the format differently. What's been the impact in audio, particularly for the brand, when you think about going to market with a platform like Spotify and saying, how do we work together to make something very, very special, because this brand is so intertwined with music?
For us, what's great is that it's actually longer dwell time. Everything else has to be like 6 second videos, whereas music, you can, you know, we've got like, it's much longer. And back to your point on attention, the way that one interacts with sound is so much more sort of like present and in the moment than through just visual, because we're so bombarded, whereas we're a lot more focused when it comes to sound. So that's why it's a huge part of our media plan also, you know? Like, we were always in it for all those reasons we talked about before. And now it's even bigger and better because of streaming, because of technology, and because of the need for attention. So no, it's amazing.
Yeah, and I think it's important also because it transcends generations and it has no borders, right? So when we look at consumers, now consumers are, the attention that they have in music and in audio in general is huge. Like if we look at Generation Z, above 94% of consumers said that audio and music is important or very important in their lives. When we look at millennials, and I'm sure you know this, but millennials is one of the generations that listens more to music on an everyday basis. They listen for more than 18 hours. So it's per week, so it's a lot. So a way to really connect with them and recognizing the power of music is ensuring that it's part of our mix. There is a key component of every touch point that we do with the consumers, because it generates great memories, it generates experiences, and that is what we're all about, right? It's not only about how you enjoy our product, but also the experience that we create. How do we bring people together to really, you know, be their true selves?
Yeah, because Lily, you may have said it really quickly, but I'll go back to it. The moment of dance, right?
Yeah.
It kind of feels right. But the idea of these 18 hours spent a week, what are people doing? Well, they're doing something else at the same time. And it may be the only format that does that very, very well,
yeah.
Right? Where you are still so well connected to the format while still living your life and doing something else, whether you're commuting or working out or dancing or cleaning the house. All of those things are almost secondary to the audio experience, which that doesn't exist anywhere else
yeah.
as well.
That's so true. And actually, you know, younger generations are very used to have multiple visual stimulus, so they can have even three screens at the same time. When you think in audio, they only can be impacted by one stimulus. So I fully agree with your point. Like, that's some of the relevance of audio as well.
Yeah, it's probably why the floors are never as clean as they could be when I'm the one cleaning the house.
Correct. Yeah.
The music up to 11.
Yeah.
So potential is here, right? You have found it. You've capitalized on it. You've done a great job with it through integrating, you know, your music investments and activations. So how do you see Bacardi Rums evolving the credibility of brand marketers and art and artists alike? What do you, how do you bring these things together and go, this is a real part of who we are? What can you do as the brand marketer to ensure people understand that it's not just an ad in the way?
Yeah.
Well, we do many things. Like, first of all, we co-produce. So to Roberto's point earlier on De Stefan, we relaunched with Conga, which is the first time that the song got a whole like remix with Mick Mill, Leslie Grace, and Boy Wonder. We also produced Make It Hot with Anita and Diplo. So we have a big role there in terms of sort of like relooking at old music, new music, creating and producing. We then support up-and-coming artists with the platform Music Liberates Music, which is massive to us. And we always work with Diplo, Boy Wonder on it. We bring people together for all the festival experiences that we put together. And we even support CSR initiative through music. So we had this program whereby we collected straws from thousands of bars and we turned them into vinyls. So it's really everything we do is just that, you know?
Yeah, and to add to Leila's point, I think one thing that we take in consideration in everything that we do is to be authentic. It needs to be anchored in our DNA. We don't want to seem opportunistic. We don't want to see fake. So it really needs to be ingrained in our DNA. And that's why everything is tied to our Caribbean roots, to our origin, to how we have been connected with music and supporting artists from generations. So I think that's a key component.
Yeah. I've personally been trying to use and discover even the format that we're in today, which is adjacent, I'll call it, to music, because it is audio.
Yep.
It is on the same services. It is competitive to those experiences that are secondary ultimately to the audio experience, right? So if I'm listening to a podcast, I'm heavily focused on that, but maybe I'm driving, right? Or maybe I'm commuting.
Mm-hmm.
But a different experience, different world for what you're doing. And it felt like that change has been organic, heavily focused on production, and this collision point. We used to talk a lot about we still do. We talk about this collision point between commerce and creative. But I think what you're talking about is a collision point between content and creatives, those creating and finding the right way kind of through the noise and into the culture of the music. So you referenced the Caribbean nature of the brand, but also the nature of the partnerships that you do. But music is worldly, right?
Yeah.
I'd love to know a little bit more about like where, and Diplo is worldly, and certainly not just focused on the Caribbean. But tell me more, like where do you see this opportunity to continue to be content partners for creatives to grow along with the brand?
For us, it's a bond. It's not so much of like a commercial play as it is sort of like a connection and a deep emotional bond. So, you know, sometimes people ask, so how would you define it? I was like, well, if it makes you move and it's happy, that's it. You know, like it has, like Roberto said, there's no borders. It's got to bring people together and uplift them. And it's simple. It's really not much more complicated than that. Like we keep it super straightforward and just us.
Yes, and I think we know what we're doing. We have a great platform and we anchor everything to that. An example is right now we have been bombarded with technology. As you know, the acceleration of technology is happening faster than ever. Right now we have been bombarded by more than 20 technologies at the same time. You name it, AI, AR, blockchain, whatever, you know a lot of that. But also we're living a moment where the human touch is really relevant. We cannot forget about that. We're living an era of sense and sensibility. So we need to ensure that we play with those elements, ensuring that the brand has a key component to connect with consumers, leveraging all the different technologies, but without forgetting that human side. So really, and music is the perfect vehicle to make it, because all of the emotions that Leila already mentioned, and all the memories that can get, and the memorability that we can create, that's very important. So we need to recognize that we're evolving, the culture is moving faster than ever. So we need to leverage all those different movements, but still be anchored to our origin, to our foundation, to make sure that resonates with the consumer.
So you said a very popular word, and we can, of course, edit it out if you don't want to talk about it, but AI has been brought up on every discussion I've seen this week. And when we think about artistry and AI, I wonder a few things. One, is AI itself an artist as a result of being able to generate content, or is AI going to be a tool that artists can use to find the right relationships to have with a brand, or the right way of thinking or speaking about maybe something that's just very topical, the way great artists do, right? They move you, they make you happy. Sometimes they make you sad, and that sadness is also a very good feeling at times, because it's with the music. But do you have any thoughts here?
Yeah, we really see it as a tool and not an artist. Reason being is IP, intellectual property, is huge for us. It's something that we suffered from, you know, being exiled from Cuba, seeing what can happen when somebody takes over your brand, your image, your art, whatever it is that you create. And that's one of the danger of AI. So we definitely are interested in working on a program for next year, well, this year actually. But it's using AI as a tool, and to even raise sort of like not just the awareness, but there is a way to do it right, and there's a way that can be done with intellectual property being protected. And that's a huge thing for us, because it's a fight we've been fighting for a long time. And that's the only danger that we see with AI. It's the taking of others and remaking without giving them the credit or redistribution of it.
Yeah, and those copyrights live at a human level.
Yes.
Well, right? So suddenly it's created.
It's doing otherwise,
and
yeah.
Who can own it. Yeah. Roberto, I felt like you were going to lean in and say something.
No, just to reinforce what Leila was saying, we want to protect the artist.
Yeah.
At the end, that's important. We will be using, and we're already using AI and learning how to use it, as with other technology, to enhance probably our reach, our scale, and to make even more good than the one that we're doing already. But it's another tool. Definitely, I don't think it's going to substitute. But obviously, opinion of one. But I think it's more about a tool to enhance the different things that we're doing.
You know, years ago, I had a cartoon on my desk, and the cartoon was two squares, almost identical. The one square had a very melancholy person, and there was sadness to it, and the sadness was a robot took my job.
Right.
The other square was a very happy same man saying,
I created a robot.
A robot took my job. Same words, just a different inflection point. Because what I think AI is going to help us do is just rise above the minutiae. Right. Use the tool as a tool. Be more strategic. Have more independent thought. Really have the time to do that, because the kind of data entry-esque work, I don't like calling it low-level work, because for a lot of people it is really important work. But I do see a world where AI allows those people to rise above and do more. At a time like this, when people are probably questioning, not beyond work-life balance, but how do I integrate what I do every day into who I am? Because we spend so much time at work with each other, that is an opportunity to spend that thing, right?
And
more time with each other.
It's also the scale that AI can provide. And that's the angle that we're looking at for this year, in terms of how can we provide access to up-and-coming artists at scale? And AI is amazing for that as a tool.
Okay. Let's pivot back. Let's reel ourselves back, because I can go down that rabbit hole. We don't need to do that today. But you have a relationship at a community level. You talk about music having no borders, which I think that's a great phrase, and I'm going to write it down and keep it. But that allows you to be very communal, very much part of the community, and you have a heritage brand here that is built within a community. It's a family company. What do you think are some of the more recent moments? And moment can be the last few years. It can be a single experience that you've had. But what are those, I guess, the key moments that have driven you to say, this feels right. This is something that we belong to and a part of. And community can be quite physical, but it can be so much more.
I think that one of those moments was when we established our platform, like the Do What Moves You. It was kind of recognizing not only a consumer insight about, you know, they have some fear to be themselves because they're fearing to be judged. So that's something that probably all of us have experienced at any point in time in our lives. So when we establish that point of view and that platform that really brings people together to allow them to be their true selves, I think was kind of an aha moment where we really discover how we can start uniting all these different people with a concept that resonates very well with them and the reality that they were living, and which is current, up to date. And how we found a connection between music and our platform, and how that music was really the pillar that allows to get into the culture of the consumers was extremely relevant. And as I was saying at the beginning, it's not only about the physical, you know, feeling of Do What Moves You, but that emotional connection that we can establish with them, and that really help us to build that community around everything that we're doing. And about, you know, you look at the different components that go from the creation of the Sound of Rome, the programs that we have with Music Liberates Music, all the festivals that we have around the globe, our partnerships, for example, with Spotify, with Live Nation. So I think it really helps us to be consistent and to be relevant in something that is culturally relevant for the consumers.
No, nothing to add. I think that's exactly that.
That's a very good answer.
It's really good.
It's a very good answer. Tell me more about some of these relationships. I didn't expect to hear Diplo today, although he is in a new rotation for me. Did a recent kind of as Diplo does, he connects kind of different artists from different places. But he had done a release with Sturgill Simpson, and Sturgill released underneath a pseudonym of Johnny Blue Skies. Great song, a lot of fun, interesting, like cross-genre meshing. But you've worked with really great artists like Diplo, and I feel like those relationships didn't come out of thin air, right? You have found the right artist to either tell the right story at the right time or represent the brand really well. What's maybe some of that process look like for someone who's never thought about how you do that?
I think we can even credit Diplo for sort of defining the Sound of Rome even more, you know, because he brings such mixity of genres together in such uplifting way that it's very much sort of like Bacardi sound. So we've been working with Diplo and Major Lazer for years now, and also with Boy Wanda, who we're a huge fan of, and I think, you know, a lot of his giant hit over the last 10 years. So we've been working with Wanda for the last 4 or 5 years. He actually reproduced Conga for us, and has been sort of like the face and ambassador for Music Liberates Music for the last 2 or 3 years. So it's, we work as a partnership. Like, it's not like we go there, hey, we've got an ad, this is how it works. It's, we have creative brainstorm session with them, and it's like, what is it that you're working on? What is it that you're interested in? And then we see where that merge, and then we do it together. So it's like a co-production. It's a partnership versus sort of like a contract, I would say, if that makes sense. And that's why those relationships last for so many years, because it's throughout.
Correct. And I will add that for us it's really important that there's some connection between the values of the artist and the values of the brand.
Yeah.
Which sounds very like a natural, but sometimes it does not happen. So we really look on how do we can add value to each other. It's what's in it for us, but also what's in it for them. We want to make sure that we add value that is not only an economic or a commercial relationship, but something that really, you know, they help us, and they, you know, give us the reach and the connection with the consumers, but how can we offer them a platform that can also amplify and get more scale of what they're doing? So I think there's a win-win relationship, the one that we really want to establish, and it's not only based on a commercial one.
Yeah, you said something special there, I think. You said something about value, and I think what's driving that relationship of in keeping it special is there's a lot of purpose behind what you've done. And I don't think there are many brands in the world that have a level of purpose that connects directly into the media and the culture and the community the way you've done it. I think you deserve to be commended for it. I would applaud, but I think it messes up the mic. but there's a new or a normal, no longer a new normal, the today, this evening, like live is back.
Yeah.
Right? You talk about concerts and being a part of like these events. It's special to see it kind of rebound and come back to life in a way that everyone wants to be at the thing. So how do you continue to be part of like the community of live music and of live experiences?
Correct. I think you're completely right. I think it's not only about going to live events, but also there's a revaluation of what really matters. So, and one of those things are precisely those experiences and those connections. We know that if you ask consumers now, like, would you prefer to have an experience or you prefer to have a gift? More than 70% of them would say, no, I prefer to have an experience. And it's quite a different experience because now they are looking more for that human touch, but still recognizing, you know, kind of a hybrid relationship between the virtual world and the real world. So that's why we are trying to combine those initiatives in the different things that we do. For example, we are sponsoring, as I mentioned before, a lot of music festivals around the world that goes from Strawberry in China, The Weeknder in India, Governors Ball in New York, Pal Norte in Mexico. So it's really huge. But we are trying to develop initiatives that connect better with the consumer. And as I was saying, that mixes a little bit of both worlds, the virtual and the real one. So actually, 2 weeks ago in New York, as part of Governor's Ball activation, we created what we call Sneak Easy, which was a partnership that we did with Stadium Goods, a very well-known sneakers store. We created a pop-up store of sneakers, co-branded between Bacardi and Stadium Goods. And at the back of the door, you have a speakeasy, which was a Bacardi rum room. So it was a great experience where consumer can find cool things, but also have that, you know, experience that only rum can bring to them, talking about that passion, that movement. And we curated with some NFTs. So when consumers arrived to the store, they were able to have an NFT with a virtual sneaker, but some of them were selected to bring it to life via 3D printing. So, you know, it's again, enhancing that experience, that connection that we can make between the brand and consumers, recognizing, you know, the way they want to live right now, those experiences, which are not only in the real world, but also in the virtual one.
In the virtual one. The sneaker side of thing is really interesting because I've been looking at and plotting, not diabolically, but on a line, where there's authenticity and rights to be parts of these microcultures. And obviously the sneaker culture is one that's very common, and I think people are very well aware of what it is. And I don't know if a brand, and this is something you want to think about, but I don't know if brands are culture creators or just a part of culture and inseparable from it, either inherently within what the brand DNA is or where the DNA is going and how you're growing. Do you think that, and this is a music conversation, but you brought up this connection through sneakers, are there other maybe microcultures that you're looking at and saying, you know, we think content is our conduit to these cultures? Are there other places that you're looking to be authentic?
Yeah, I mean, the sneaker community is definitely a huge one. I mean, the ad that we have at the moment running on TV is, it's, you know, it's called If It's a Floor, It's a Dance Floor. It's only basically the story of like sneakers going around. So it's a bit of a fetish that we have. And we partnered with Jeff Staples, who's absolutely amazing, and he created this collection just for us. So that has also, because of movement, because of dance, it's something that's sort of like adjacent to music, but part of it. We also have partnered and worked for Music Liberates Music last year, no, the year before last, in launching an NFT of a mixtape album with royalties that were shared between fans and the artist. So that's always a community that we're after, and have a lot of program around that. And streetwear in general. Last year, Music Liberates Music, which is nominated for a Lion this week, so hopefully we win. But we partnered with Namias, Donny Namias, who's this amazing streetwear designer from Los Angeles. And he created a wearable collection for us that was launched in Paris Fashion Week. And it was all QR coded that will take you to three up and coming artists on Spotify to raise their profile. So I would say that sort of like streetwear fashion has always been probably like one of the adjacency that we're really into, yeah.
I love that,
yeah.
Right? Because it's more than adjacency, right? You've got these through lines that are very real, very easy to understand, and they feel authentic to those experiences.
And music remains at the core of them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's special. You guys are doing something really special here. You should be proud of it. It is so special that I bet there are points where you're looking back and saying, I wish I had done that sooner. I wish I had that thought earlier because of how impactful it was. I'm curious, as I am, and that is the whole point of this podcast, is to stay curious and think about what's on the peripheral and orbital, the things that we do. Tell me maybe one or two things that you've learned along the way that you're like, this is so great, and it's part of what we're going to do forever. I wish I could have implemented it sooner.
Yeah, I think that's a great question and a great challenge, right? Yeah. Because obviously it's tough to look back and, you know, see reality about what has been working and what has not, then to improve. But I think that's the way you can really move forward. I may say what one of the things was probably to establish a brand platform earlier in time. I think we need to recognize that at some point the brand was a little lost. Like we were doing amazing things, but not necessarily in a consistent way. So I think when we establish Do What Moves You as the platform, it really helped us to convey everything under one umbrella that was really consistent and that has really more power. So I think that's one of the things. The other thing, I will look for more agility. I think, and I really like to push myself and the team to really be very agile, to learn about what's happening, to take more risks. Because at the end, not necessarily what is working this year is going to work next one. So I think there's always that challenge of how can we raise the bar and we can continue to be in an agile way, you know, to improve. And I may say the third one is about scaling it. Sometimes I think we have done great things that we are the only ones that know about them. So I think we have, as a big brand, we have the power of amplifying more what we're doing. So I think that's the other thing, like how can we really scale things up to ensure that really more people know what we're doing, and because I think some of those are really very cool things.
Yeah, a bit of a, if you had a time machine, kind of a, because you'd take this information back. I think something that is, I've heard this story about, you know, if you had a time machine, you can go back. In general, would you actually have any value as a result of being able to go back? Could you tell someone how a smartphone works? Could you explain the future in a way that people could believe and understand and see? And I think most people couldn't, but I think what you're talking about doing, even if it's a short-term leap back in time, I think that's a very real capability, right? You'd be able to bring something back and make change with that. But Leila, I'd love to...
Yeah, no, I think Roberta said it in the sense of going back to our origin, I think, is a big one. Establishing that BVI that we have, which is really lush, green, positive, and Latin Caribbean rooted. And at some point, I think maybe we lost ourselves a bit. We were maybe from everywhere, nowhere. So going back to our origin is probably the thing that I would say we should have done maybe sooner, being proud of where we're from.
I love it. Well, this is Can. I won't keep you from the wonderful weather we have. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this. A 9 a.m. podcast, I'm sure, was not on your high to-do list. And I know you flew in yesterday and probably dealing with a little bit of jet lag. So, again, thank you so much for
thank
coming.
You, Luke.
Thank you, Luke. It has been great. Yeah. Thanks again for the opportunity. And I really enjoyed this conversation.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Roberto, Leila.
Thank you for having us. Now let's have a mojito, no? Let's go.
Fine. All righty. Nature of the Beast.
Thank you.